my mind, you just wake up and go rake.
Churio, the first time that I saw him, I think, was actually in Instructs. 16 or 17, might have been, I think he was 17. But his ability to, like, basically do everything in spring training, it was phenomenal. That was the first time I was like, this kid is the real deal. He's a special talent.
Follow at Wake and Rake Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Here's Danny and Will.
Wake and Rake Podcast, joined by a special guest, Mr. Jake McKinley, head coach of the University of Nevada Wolfpack. From what I understand, you can't say University of Nevada Reno. You must say University of Nevada because of the rivalry with UNLV. Is that right?
I mean, you could say the rivalry drives some of that, but the reason behind it is we are actually the first university in Nevada. You know what I mean? So there's an originality component to it, because UNLV is actually, it's not that old. It's a fairly new school. We're 150 years old. So I think there's an originality component, and I'm sure, yes, the rivalry does drive how much people drive that.
Is there a little bit of a hostility between UNR and, can you say UNR?
Can I say UNR? You cannot. It is the University of Nevada.
Jeez.
But you know what? It's funny though. Like, I'll see it written down in certain places. Like, recruits will email us and they're like, hey, I'm interested in UNR. And I'm already like, ooh, like, buddy, that ain't it. So no, I'm just kidding, Danny. But it is something we definitely have tried to, like, get out of the, lingo, around, especially in the local area, like, especially, you know, don't want to hear that from people here in town. So working through it.
Thanks for joining us. For those that don't know, spent 4 years with the Milwaukee Brewers as the vice president of player development, director of player development. Most importantly, you spent time at Menlo College and the newly named Jessup University, not to be confused with William Jessup, which I don't know if you've heard that.
I have heard that, and I'm probably going to botch that at some point in the interview. So just giving you a heads up.
No, that's I will too. It's taken me a while. It's like the Cleveland Guardians. It took me like 2 years to finally get their name down.
Yeah.
Most importantly, though, largest single season turnaround in college baseball history. I say most importantly because I was part of that one, and that one's my favorite nugget of yours. So we went from 10 wins in 2017. I'm getting
2017.
Old.
Yeah, 2017.
You see the gray hair I'm getting, Jake?
Well, I'd show you my gray hair, but I don't have any hair. So all right, though.
I think I'd rather be in your department at this point.
I don't know, man. That's a simple comb with a little bit of Just for Men, and you're chilling.
A little Rogaine.
Yeah, that's what I need, actually.
By the way, speaking of largest turnaround and your time at Jessup being my head coach, it's a little hot in here. So I'm going to, for our audio listeners, I'm just going to take off this front shirt here. And I'm actually going to bring out this shirt here, which says McKinley University in hashtag Jake. I had to dig into the closet for it, but I will to this one. No, wait, I got one more. Bring out the old cap.
All right.
Interview. We got to look right for a Jake McKinley interview here.
I appreciate that. It means the world.
You still got your shirt?
I never had one of those shirts, to be honest with you. So Mac Boone, a former player at Menlo that I had coached, he's such a great dude, but he made those and they just kind of got passed out. And to be honest, it made me feel a little uncomfortable. Still kind of does. But yeah, I did not purchase one of those, but I do appreciate when guys wear them.
Nice, yeah, I think it'd be weird to have your own face on your own. Yeah, would be something else.
No, it's a pretty tough look.
Fair enough. Let's talk about your squad this year. Last year you got off to a hot start. Injuries started mounting up a little bit, and it was your first year at UNR too. This is your first Division I head coaching gig as well. 4 years with the Brewers, a few years at Menlo, a couple years at Jessup. So you have plenty of college baseball coaching experience. You were assistant at Sac State. That was the first year, and then now transitioning into the second year. How do you think things are coming along?
Really good. Super satisfied with the progress, and I'm really happy with where the team is today. Today is actually the last day that we can have any contact with them in any capacity. So just like looking where we're at from I would say mostly a depth perspective is why I do feel good about the team, because as you mentioned, you know, injuries are they're going to happen. They're going to happen on any team at some point in the year. It's just, it's part of baseball, right? So I think from a depth perspective, we're in a spot that, you know, if one of those unfortunate things happens, we're going to have good players to be able to insert. So that's huge. But overall, like raw talent, I like where we're at. And I think the thing that like I've been the most happy with is how, you know, the team has gelled together. Like there is good harmony. I think it's real harmony. But, you know, the path to getting there was like we started and it's a lot of guys from a lot of different parts of the country. There are a lot of new players and there's a blend of players that have been here for multiple years, right? And so you put those things together and you go through this path of getting to where you are today. It's not always clean. But the thing that I've liked about this team is when it's not clean, like they've bounced back quick and I feel like they stay together. They do play for the guy around them. So I think from a, you know, a culture, that's such a buzzword, but, you know, a culture perspective and talent perspective, I think we're in a great spot.
A big question around Division I athletics, college football, especially NIL. How much does that impact you at UNR, if at all? Because baseball is a little bit different in college football. You don't have Shedeur Sanders, who's worth, you know, net worth $5 million necessarily. But you're also competing with a Paul Skeens at LSU, who is worth, before he got drafted, probably quite a bit of money. So how much does that impact you at UNR? Or excuse me, I did it again.
I know.
Just cut me off.
Hey, bro,
that's good. University of Nevada. Pardon me.
No, that's good. So, God, it's such a funny thing, man. Like, I think anybody should be able to earn money off their name, image, and likeness. I really do. Like, it makes good sense. But you know, as it's been introduced, I think there's different players that you, like some people have collectives and opportunities to provide greater resources in that space. So, you know, the thing about it is like, I don't think it's going anywhere. I'm sure over time, like any new thing, it will probably reach certain levels of regulation and we have really smart people in leadership that'll drive that, you know, but for us, like our attitude on it is like, it's here to stay. And so if it's an area that can provide you a competitive advantage, like it's irresponsible not to look at it. So this is a space that, you know, as it grows, as we grow as a program, I think it's a space we want to be active players in. But again, it's just, I think we're at a different stage in terms of, you know, where that resource is, but I do think it's growing. And I do think like locally, there's good excitement around it. Like I said before, we have a great fan base here in Reno. And there's a lot of, you know, great people that have come out of this institution. So opportunities for NIL, not just for baseball, but all sports, I think are a real thing here. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going anywhere. So we have to be at least looking at that.
The buzzwords that you used that kind of jarred my attention here was competitive advantage. Do you think that University of Nevada is at a disadvantage compared to your LSUs, your SEC schools, your Arkansas, your university? I mean, you're on the West Coast, so you're dealing with Pac-12 schools. Stanford's in the College World Series every single year. You're dealing with University of Oregon, who's very competitive. USC, UCLA. You guys actually beat USC. I think you did midweek game last year. Do you think it actually puts a school such as yourself, who maybe isn't in a Power 5 conference, at a disadvantage, the NIL?
Gosh, man, that's a good question. It's a tough question too. So, you know, when you look at it black and white, it would be really, really easy to argue yes. You know what I mean? Like, are resources the same? No. But I think you've also seen, even at the Power 5 level, I think there's certain facility setups that are not the most robust or the best, and they're really good every year. And they're competitive in all spaces, maybe including NIL. Think of a place like a Southern Miss, I think is a good example. You go there and you would not feel like you're at a mid-major, right? Now, here in Reno, I think we have those same ingredients. you know, if you go to one of our basketball games right now, like you feel like you're at a Power Five situation, like a big time one. And we have a great basketball program, but like also here at the baseball perspective, there is a tradition of like, you know, strong fan base and strong connection. So I think this is an open-minded community. And I think, again, like the NIL space is a space that we are actively trying to keep up, but I think perspective matters. Like, I think if your mindset as a program leader, for example, is like, God, we're at such a disadvantage. If that's what you're entering it with, I don't think you give yourself a shot. So I would say we're actively working to compete at that level. You know, are the resources the same right now? No. Could they grow to that? Sure. I mean, since our AD's been here, she's accomplished like so many incredible things in town. I don't know if you've seen like the partnership we have with the Grand Sierra Resort downtown.
Yeah. You guys are getting a new arena down there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a $1 billion project.
That's awesome.
And you know, like every sport here has had like improvements in facilities. So I think the standard here as it relates to anything that goes into competitive advantages, whether that's NIL, whether it's facilities, we have an athletic director and we have a president. The standard for them is to be at the highest level. You know what I mean? And so it's to work around some of those disadvantages that appear to be there on paper. But I think when you have like those right people in place, along with a strong community and a good fan base, you can catch up to a degree where you can be competitive. Because as you know, baseball just has so much parity. And you know, you see mid majors get to Omaha.
Yeah.
Oral Roberts last year, you know, good example. So, yeah. So is it in a different spot? Sure. But is it going to put us into a mindset of complaining about it? Like, no way.
I don't want to keep hammering the same subject. We can kind of move on eventually, but just like as a guy who's trying to understand the concept of on NIL, when you're recruiting guys, are you saying, hey, we have a local business that's actually looking for a spokesperson that's willing to offer you XYZ? So I don't really know how the ins and outs work exactly, but do you mm-hmm. have partnerships with like local businesses?
We do have situations, whether it's NIL, just overall operating budget, like stimulating that, or you know, raising for capital projects, whatever. Yes, there are people that have been incredibly helpful to the baseball program. The Dolans, from you know all the car dealerships here in town have been an incredible partner. Don Weir is an alumni; the field is named after him. And so again, that's an open-minded group too. But you know, in the recruiting process, we don't really talk about it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Other than you know, there are NIL opportunities, but those things also have to be solicited through. You know, the athlete and the individual, or you know, whoever, and there's collectives that help with that as well. But you know, it's honestly like it's a new space for me. When I left college baseball to go to pro baseball, I don't think NIL existed yet. I think it was like very close, or it was being talked about. And then so I was out of college sports for a while, and I got back in. I was shocked how much that space has grown in a short period of time. So I'm still learning it myself, but, yeah, it's here to stay for sure.
You know how much money Jordan Getzelman could have made at Menlo College off NIL deals. He could have been the face of, you guys were 5 minutes down the road from Facebook. He could have been the face of every social media. He could have been the face of Tesla. He could have been on the billboards instead of Elon Musk. Jordan Getzelman is just, he's a handsome man. Your assistant coach.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned how much could he have made off of NIL. So let's say a local business said, Jordan, will give you $1,000 every time you hit a home run.
That's how it works.
He would have made $27,000. It could work in any way, really. But really? That was more of a compliment to Jordan hitting 27 home runs last year. But yeah, who knows, man? Shoot, if it was Facebook, there's probably no limit on what that could have been.
Let's talk about your time in Milwaukee. They're kind of in a point of transition now, but one of my favorite quotes that David Stearns, who's now with the Mets, said about you is, quote, Jake is a great leader and coach. He makes the people around him better, and he does so with humility, curiosity and passion for baseball. Nevada baseball has found a good one. That was David Stearns on you accepting the job with University of Nevada. David Stearns, your relationship with him, you got pretty high up with the Brewers front office in your later years with Milwaukee. Your relationship with him, the baseball mind that he has, what was your relationship with David Stearns exactly?
So was fortunate to work alongside David for 4 years, and you know, the hype on him is true. I mean, that's what I will say about that guy. He is I think he's an elite leader of people, you know, and stylistically, I just think he's an understanding guy. I don't think he's like a super quick to react guy. Like, I think he gathers information before he makes decisions. And so I think he is a really, really great decision maker, but he's a good guy too. Like, he's just a good person. It was, at least in my time in Milwaukee, like when I was in Arizona, David was going to come to town. Like, you're always happy to see David, or if you run into him at an affiliate or Milwaukee. Just made time for people. I learned a ton from him. I also think the way he handled like the COVID situation with the Brewers, he just did such a good job of handling a situation where there was so much unknown. Like I said, the relationship with David was great. And you know, fortunate just to have him in my life in some capacity still is great. But I'm super happy for him too with the new opportunity. But yeah, love David, and honestly, everybody in that organization was awesome.
I remember you telling me, gosh, probably a couple of years ago, probably around the COVID time, is like Milwaukee operates a lot like the New England Patriots do, in that they keep things pretty hush hush. And just like from personal experience, you don't really hear rumors coming out of Milwaukee very often. Like, the front office is very tight knit. You don't hear murmurs. You don't hear trade rumors. And when something does actually happen, it kind of is shocking. Like, for example, when Josh Hader got traded, everybody was stunned because you don't hear anything leading up to it at all. The culture in Milwaukee is very much like, keep things tight, keep things, you know, keep that mouth closed. Like there's not too many reporters that are coming in for sources, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the goal of every team to be like that, you know, too, right? Where it's like you try to keep things in house, you know what I mean? It's the locker room is sacred, the front office is sacred, and you protect it. But you know what's crazy? Like, at least in my time, I mean, of course, like any organization, and whether it's sports or non-sports, there's going to be things where things are said and it's like, hey, this doesn't leave the room, right? But you know, when I think about that buzzword culture, and I think about like the Brewers culture, I can't recall like that many times when I was there where it's like, it's explicitly said like, hey, this doesn't leave the room. And the reason I say that is like, I think that's a compliment to like Brewers culture that I think is probably longstanding, is like, hey, I think people have each other's backs there. And, you know, what's said, you know, behind closed doors, you just know it's sacred. I would say that's a compliment to the Brewers, you know, for something that's probably been established long before I got there, you know. So but again, man, I can't recall too many scenarios where people are like banging the tables like, hey, this stays in here. I think it was just implied. And I think any good organization probably operates like that, honestly.
I've just always wondered, like, a trade goes down, right? Are these GMs just immediately texting Jeff Passan, Ken Rosenthal, like, hey, just traded Jake Thompson to, you know, New York. Hey, just traded Jake McKinley to Texas. Like, I've always found it really strange, like, the timing of it. Like, if I make a trade with somebody, like, my first inclination is not, oh, I'm going to text my reporter buddy and tell him just went down. I guess that's the relationship that some of these GMs have. I don't know if David had the same relationship with some of these big time reporters, but I just found that strange. Like, I don't understand how the whole like source tells me Juan Soto's on the trading block. It's like, why? Like, what's in it for the GM at that point? I've always found that really.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I'm probably not qualified to speak on that. But my hunch is that those reporters are not hearing it from the GMs directly. My hunch is that probably runs through more of the channel of, like, maybe a leak that started with the player or the agent. I'm not sure, but, you know, I remember when we made some trades when I was with the Brewers, and I can't imagine, like, anybody there's first response was to, like, let Jeff Passan know. Right. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's another thing that might come from, like, media relations. But yeah, it's interesting in all sports when it's like a trade deadline, you know, big free agent, how the rumors swirl. And sometimes, like, I would just, like, hear rumors about us, and it was, like, laughable. And I would never like, go out of my way, like, correct anybody, like, oh, interesting. But yeah, I don't know how all that stuff swirls and how quickly it gets to people. It's shocking.
Did you ever have anybody other than myself, of course, like, try and use you as an inside source?
Not really. There were,
like,
things.
Hey, Jake, I can take care of your family very, very well here in Milwaukee. If you tell me if Yelich is on the move.
No, never. That never happened. No, man. I mean, there's been, even since I've gone to Nevada, like, there's been, you know, reporters that have kept in touch with me on things. And most of the time I don't have good information to give them anyway. So it's usually like, hey, I'm sorry. I don't have much here.
Unless they're asking about your Tesla, right?
right. Exactly. Then, you know, they won't get a response, but, yeah. And, you know, usually it was more so, you know, if we traded a minor leaguer in exchange, you know, for a big leaguer or whatever, like, I'd sometimes get questions on those minor leaguers, or, you know, if we absorbed minor leaguers in a trade. And then obviously, like, your high picks, I think those were the questions I would usually field. And those are so benign, because usually the people involved in those situations, they're just, like, really good. They're really good players. They're easy to praise, you know?
That's actually probably a good segue. Jackson Chirio, you were with the organization when the Brewers signed him out of Venezuela, I want to say it was, right?
Dominican Republic.
Is it DR? Apologies. He just, eight-year, $82 million extension, and he's never played. He doesn't have a big league at bat quite yet. So obviously Milwaukee loves the kid, and they're even thinking he could be starting in the outfield for him come opening day. What was your experience like with Chirio? And, you know, obviously he's the real deal in Milwaukee's eyes. How much did you see of him, and how much did you see of his development in the minors?
And by the way, I stand corrected. Chirio is from Venezuela. But I got a little tied up there, because I remember I met him in the Dominican Republic. But yeah, like, a very special talent.
Did you recruit him? Not recruit, but, like, were you part of the, you know, international signing for Chirio?
No, I wasn't. And our international group with the Brewers, they were awesome. They did such a good job. They still do. Like, the people that are in international scouting with the Brewers are so good. But Chirio, the first time that I saw him, I think, was actually in Instructs. It was kind of that weird transition. I think it was after COVID, because I remember Instructs was, we were still kind of in COVID protocols, but I saw Chirio then for the first time for, like, an extended look. And I think at the time he was, like, 16 or 17, he was 17, but his ability to, like, basically do everything in spring training, it was phenomenal. Like, facing guys with, you know, extreme velocity, plus secondary stuff, like, he would just give quality at bats. Like, he was such a tough out. Obviously hits the ball hard. So yeah, like, that was the first time I was like, this kid is the real deal. He's a special talent.
You know, immediately with those guys, right? Like, these guys are just built different.
Yeah, but it's funny, because the first time I saw him, I mean, he was a kid. Right. You know what I mean? And so he's just, like, physically, he doesn't look the same as some of the grown men that are there. But then you see him play against him, you're like, oh my goodness, like, this is just different. Like, even as a kid, just the way, like, the ball jumps off the bat. You know what I mean?
Well, you coached Reese Hoskins at Sac State, and I've picked your brain on this. You said Reese was a good player, but you at the time, you probably wouldn't have guessed that he would turn into this 30-plus home run, perennial, you know, all-star caliber player in Major League Baseball, at least maybe not at the time, but he developed into this, you know, absolute stud of a first baseman. So some guys just develop differently, right?
Oh, totally. So, like, so I was with Reese for 2 years. Yeah. But, like, his freshman year, I remember in the fall, you saw signs of, like, hey, this kid might play pro ball. You know what I mean? Which is an enormous compliment, by the way. But, you know, you're seeing that through the fall. And then I want to say he did not start the first game of his freshman year. Mm-hmm. He started the second game of his freshman year and for the most part never came out of the lineup again. But I do remember, I think his first college at bat, he had a double. And then we went down to UCLA the next weekend and he just like centered everything off of their pitching. So that's when I started to think like, man, this guy could be a big leaguer. You know what I mean? He just like, he was making at bats look easy. But to your point, like totally, like some guys just develop later too, and you're seeing it now in the big leagues, right? You see like 28, 29 year olds getting called up for the first time, and you know they throw like 100 miles an hour. So I just think everyone's clock of development is so much different, and that's why when you see a guy like Acurio, for example, when he's like 17 and he's doing the things he's doing, I think that's why it's like so easy to get excited about a guy like that.
This might be a stretch, but I found a timeline. All right. And again, this is probably a stretch, but all right. So 2019, you guys traded Mauricio Dubon, the Brewers did, to San Francisco. When I was at Jessup, you were at Jessup. We had Logan Webb come and work out with us a handful of times out in Lincoln at our field of practices. Obviously you knew Logan, at least just being a local guy. That trade for Dubon was between the Brewers and the Giants. Webb was kind of like up and down with the big leagues at the time. Is there any connection with you and the Brewers front office saying like, hey, there's this kid named Logan Webb who's in the minors. I know him pretty well. I've seen him firsthand. Maybe he could be a piece in the Dubon deal.
You know what? So I want to say those trades went down like very early in my Brewers tenure. Like the Dubon trade, when was it? Was it like 2019?
Yeah, 2020? It was early on 2019.
Because it's funny, when Dubon got called up to the big leagues with us, I was actually in AAA at the time. So, Rick Sweet FaceTimed him to let him know he's getting called up. So I know he got to the big leagues with us in 2019.
July 31st, 2019.
That's when the trade was. Yeah. So you know what? Like, That was my first year with the organization. And no, I mean, the connections there were never really discussed. I've known Dubon since he was 15 years old. But
Sacramento
also, too,
kid,
if you're
right? Sacramento kid?
Yeah. Went to Christian Brothers High School. And so he was around the field at Sac State. But yeah, like, I guess it's like a first year guy. I didn't want to like really say much, you know what I mean? Like, hey, I used to coach this kid, or this guy used to train with us at Jessup. But it's pretty crazy, like they both turned out to be really good big leaguers, you know?
Yeah, it is remarkable that you made the jump from Jessup to a big league club, though. Like, you went from NAIA to Major League Baseball within like a flip of the switch, which is kind of, that's remarkable. Like, for me, being one of your former players, it's just fun for me to kind of see your career progress, and now seeing you at University of Nevada, not to be confused with UNR, that this is what you wanted to do. Like, you wanted to teach kids, you wanted to coach kids. So it's cool for me to see you where you're at right now. And it seems like you're really happy, and you got a hell of a coaching staff with you too. So,
yeah,
I think it's great, man. I need to get out to Reno, watch you guys. I've already touched base with Handsome himself, Josh Hook, and we're going to go out there and watch a couple games and get out there this spring.
Oh, that's awesome. And I, you know, just to what you just said, man, like the jump from NAI to the Brewers, I just want to say like that is good on the Brewers and good kind of on the industry that the net has been spread a little bit wider in coaching hires. And there's been some college coaches that have gone to pro ball and have done a good job, done a really good job. You know, Pat Murphy's a great example. Pat Murphy's a big league manager, you know, and he's kind of more of a college background. So I just think, like, it's not just me. Like, you know, there's other college coaches that have made that jump and have had success. So I think that's awesome for the industry. But you know what, man, like, the thing that makes good coaches is good players. I believe that. And you're obviously part of that journey. So, no, I mean, I am 100%. Like, I've had the opportunities I've had because of good players.
Well, you inherited me, so you can't even claim that. You can't claim my talent. You were blessed with my talents.
Yes, no doubt about it. I walked into a gold mine and I realized that.
From what I understand, fall baseball, I'm pretty sure you went home and told Ty, one of our assistant coaches, yeah, I don't think we're going to be very good this year, guys. And to your surprise, we won 40-something games.
Happened. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, shoot, you were on that team, so you can know what I'm speaking to. But, like, that team was talented, no question.
Yeah. We got a couple guys that, you know, coming in the spring, too. Like, we got Ash Khan, and we got Andrew Schaap. Schaap's ended up getting drafted by the Dodgers, too. So, you know, we got talent midway.
We did, yeah, which is a kind of a huge advantage at that level that you can kind of like go shop a little bit at Christmas time. Yeah. But yeah, like I do look at that team though, and I still to this day think the team was extremely talented. I don't want to say overachieved, you know what I mean? But I would say more exceeded expectations, which I don't know, like in any team situation, like I think we all agree, like a team that is connected and has you know, strong togetherness and harmony, those types of things, like those teams will exceed expectations. And I think back on that team, and that team just had like incredible connection. It was a tremendous group of people.
Last couple of things before I let you go. I know you got babies to kiss. How do you feel about your New York Jets? It's tough. I wanted to save this for, you know, the end of this dialogue, because I wanted to give you time to kind of like get your words correctly, you know, get your political speak figured out first, because it's tough right now in every single area with the New York Jets, and you're a diehard Jets fan, and I know that you're going through it. So I hope I gave you enough time to, you know, figure out what you're going to say, because this is very, very important.
Yeah, we're not wrapping up this interview anytime soon, but no, I'm just kidding. You know who I'm really starting to feel bad for is my pops. Okay, so he's been a Jets fan his whole life. That's how I became a Jets fan, right? And so they're on this playoff drought, you know what I mean? And my dad and I talk on the phone almost every day. And we talk about the Jets every conversation.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, so I'm starting to feel bad for my dad because, like, he's kind of worn it since he was a kid, but I don't know, like I'm 39. I've kind of worn it since I was a kid too. But I will say though, like, in my lifetime, the Jets have been to 3 AFC championship games. So that there's been some really, really exciting years, but this current drought that the team is in, it's wearing on us a little bit. So especially with the expectations coming into the year, man, that's hard as a fan. But I will say, you know, like I do try to always look at these things through the coaching lens. And man, like there's been a little bit of tough luck with that situation. And I really like their head coach. Like I really think Robert Saleh is a great coach. So my hope is that they're able to keep it together if they get Aaron Rodgers back. But yeah, man, it's been tough. You brought this up and you opened up a can of worms.
I think it'd be a disservice to fire Saleh. Like, what is he supposed to do with Zach Wilson, Trevor Siemian? Who was the first backup that went in for Wilson? I only remember
Tim Boyle,
who had more interceptions and touchdowns in college. Like, what do you expect? You know?
Yeah, man. It's
Breece Hall's a stud, though.
Breece Hall's a stud. Garrett Wilson's a stud. There's some really good players on that team. So I don't know enough about football to comment on. You know, can you make it work with this quarterback or not? But I just know as a fan, I'm just like, dang, man. It's going to be another year where we don't go to the postseason. I think the drought's like, I think it's like 13 years now.
It's the longest in the four major sports, if I'm not,
yeah, it's a dagger.
Well, dude, it was first, it was the Kings, who, as you might remember, here in Sacramento, diehard Kings fan here. So trust me, man, I know the pain. I get it. It sucks.
No doubt. And the Kings have gotten so much better. They've done a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Mac Jones or Zach Wilson, who'd you rather have?
So I would say Zach Wilson, which I know could raise some eyebrows, but you know what? Like the thing that, and I actually shared this with our player. So I think Zach Wilson's still like 23, 24.
I can.
But anyways, he's kind of like, he's just a tick older than the players that are at this level. And actually there are some 24-year-olds in Division I baseball right now because of the COVID rules.
He's 24.
He's 24. Okay. So he's still like really young, but God, if you think of the situation he's been in, people have been like brutal on him. You know what I mean? And like, I think it's just like probably a tough situation to start out and not have a ton of success early. And then you just kind of get buried. But the thing I will say, I don't know if you saw the interview the other day when they asked him about getting benched. And I thought his response was like really, really mature. So I always root for people that I think like have just bettered themselves.
He's good at the podium. He's very good at the podium. And I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, he was not great.
Correct. Correct. Yes. And he's bettered himself. So it's like, I want him to be good. You know what I mean? Just because I think the guy like works. I don't know how like real everything you see on Hard Knocks is, but it looked in Hard Knocks like he was like being a great teammate. Like nobody expected this guy to start or see the field, and then four plays in, he's your guy, right? Mm-hmm. So I think like he's conducted himself really well, and I would say that's why I would pick him over Mac Jones. Also, I don't really know anything about Mac Jones. So he went to Roll Tide, right? Went to Bama.
Yeah, he went to Bama.
Yeah,
he's a lot less talented than Zach Wilson's got talent, man. Does no cannon? I think he might have 4 years left of baseball eligibility. I don't know how it works, crossover sports, but get that down.
I think it'd be an amateurism issue, but I bet you he could chuck.
NIL money. I don't know if it's quite near jet money, but
One day.
All right, Skip, I'll let you go here. Again, I appreciate your time. Sorry Will couldn't be here to join us here. He's got sick kids. I think it's kind of that season with Christmas time. You got a favorite Christmas song as we wrap up here? No pun intended.
Hey, actually, I don't like Christmas music, but because it like insists upon itself for like 5 weeks of the year. You go like every store you go into, every place you go into, you just can't avoid it. And it kind of drowns out like other music. So my coaching staff's been giving me hell. Because like I'm a Scrooge, right? Like they put Christmas music on in the office the other day.
Good.
and I walked in, I was like, what is this? So anyways, that being said, 12 Days of Christmas.
Okay.
That song, right?
I feel like so there's no actually, like truth to this though. You're just like answering the question because you hate everything about Christmas. Now it feels surface level and fake.
No, hear me out. Hear me out. So we're doing a drill today at practice called the 12 Days of Defense. And we wrote a song yesterday in the office. And like, we're going to execute 12 defensive plays in the form of 12 Days of Christmas. So, and the lyrics are, they're just so well done. This turned into a big coaching staff initiative. Like, you know, what are the plays that happen? What are the ones we need to work on? And we built it into a song. The players don't know what's going to happen yet. So, like, we're going to have a meeting in the locker room. And I already know which player I'm going to have come up. But I'm going to have him sing our 12 Days of Defense song. And we're going to go see if we can execute it in 40 minutes. Because that's how much time we get with these guys today. and we'll see how it goes. But that's why 12 Days of Christmas is my favorite song. Because we built a drill around that song, and it's near Christmas time, so and it just brought me such joy. building that out yesterday with the staff.
Not gonna lie, that was just a really disappointing answer all around.
Come on, man. You've got to admit, when you played,
you don't have to defend yourself. It's all right. Like, it's a bad answer. Like, they're not all going to be good, Jake. You know, like, you have a lot of insight, culture building. Like, if I need to know how to build culture, I'm coming to you. But Christmas knowledge, dude, it's just not going to happen. Sorry.
But tell me in 2018, like, I don't think the players know that I'm such a Scrooge, apparently. But if you were playing for me in 2018 and we did this drill that I just described, don't for a second pretend that you wouldn't have been stoked. You would have been so fired up. And the fourth day of Christmas is four PFPs. So you would have been involved in that play.
It's a lot of cardio. Yeah.
The sixth day of Christmas is double play balls. You could potentially be involved in that, you know? Mm-hmm. So
it brought me such joy. You're kind of festive, actually, because I remember Halloween, you put pumpkins on at home plate, and we had to, you know, we were throwing a bullpen kind of ish or some competition where we had to, whoever could destroy the pumpkin first one or something. You're kind of festive, even if you are a Scrooge.
Hey, listen, we did the pumpkin game this year.
Yeah.
So you remember the rule, like, you got to hit the pumpkin five times, but if you can get it to go through the pumpkin and, like, stick inside of the pumpkin, it was a walk-off.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in my coaching career, we saw a walk-off this year.
Oh, wow. There we go.
Yeah, we had a guy, like, we had a guy basically run and gun and just hit it in the perfect spot, blew the thing up, and ball stuck inside. It was unbelievable. It was really cool.
And here I was thinking I got 2 years left of eligibility, and I was still thinking about coming back to play. Now I know I'm not going to make it because these guys throw too fucking hard now. Jeez.
They do. Velo is crazy. It's crazy in college baseball. It's crazy in pro baseball. I mean, shoot, man, you think back to just 5 or 6 years ago when we were at Jessup. You know, we would see guys throwing like 90, maybe up to 93, but like it wasn't very common. And when a guy was like 90, it looked firm. Like 90 is like the new 85, I swear. So it's totally changed the landscape of recruiting and development, and, you know, the standard of velocity is just, it's wild right now. And especially in college baseball, honestly, even in non-division one baseball all the time, you see guys that are in division three NAI, throwing mid 90s. So, it's like NIL velocity is not going anywhere. So we just got to adjust to it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you need 85 with tilt, you have my number. All right.
Hey,
with tilt.
Listen, man, we have obviously TrackMan now, you know what I mean? And so back in the day, it was kind of like, God, Danny just like strikes a lot of guys out, you know, or like Danny just gets weak contact. But now the TrackMan can help us tell the story of why.
Yeah.
And you had some key ingredients, I think, that made you really tough to hit. Low release height, a little bit of an upshoot fastball. At 86, probably looked like 90. So
there's a reason I'm sitting in this chair. But but I'll get out of this chair and go watch it. Good luck with 12 Days of Christmas. Again, really, really appreciate your time here.
Anytime.
We'll have to get you on at some point here, and we'll actually have Will pick your brain a little bit more.
Sound good? Yeah, man. Anything you need. Perfect. Glad to be here.
All right, good luck. Have a great Christmas. Don't be too much of a Scrooge. Have fun with 12 Days of Christmas, all right?
All right, thanks, Danny.